Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
Time to look at some stories from other parts of the world that might necessarily get the attention they deserve. We're joined once again by Jonathan DeBurka Butler. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Right, we're going to go to Rwanda first. And this is about a singer who's died in police custody. This guy was a huge star in Rwanda, as I remember.
Yeah, he was a big gospel singer. Kitsito Mihigo was his name. And he was fairly political. He got in trouble a few years ago. He was found guilty in 2015. Of conspiracy to murder or harm President Paul Kagame. Now, that's not something you do in Rwanda. Paul Kagame wouldn't be the best at taking criticism, and he's been known to actually send people abroad to get rid of people who criticize him in other countries and that kind of thing. So when you're doing it in the country that he's the president of, you're not really going to get away with it. So as I said, he was found guilty of this conspiracy back in 2015, probably trumped up charges, but there you go. And he was sentenced to 10 years in prison. But back in 2018, the benevolent dictator that Kagame is decided to pardon him along with a few other people. So it made him look good. But this singer was then rearrested last week. Now, the charges that were levelled against him was that he was said to be trying to get over the border into Burundi to join up with militants that were against Kagame, effectively. Mm. So those were the charges that were levelled against him. He was 3 days in prison. His family were allowed to see him. His lawyers were allowed to see him. But on the third day, he was found dead in his cell. And the official line is that he committed suicide. Now, this is being treated with severe scepticism, as you can imagine, both within and without Rwanda. So it seems unlikely that is how he died, but that's what the police are saying.
Yeah, and I think Channel 4 had a recording that he made when he was in prison saying, if I'm ever found dead, I've been told multiple occasions that you will be dead if you keep doing this thing. And a lot of this seems to be just the stance he took as a singer, that in one of his songs, apparently, when he was talking about the massacre of Tutsis, he referred to the fact that there were revenge killings,
yes,
which of course has been officially denied.
Yeah, and so, I mean, this is something that they don't really like raking over the past, even though officially they say they do, because they've got, you know, all of these committees of reconciliation and the like, but they really don't like looking over it. And of course, it has an awful lot to do with the fact that Kagame was the head of the army that put a stop to the civil war, effectively, back whenever it was. 94, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a genocide. He's not a great man for looking into the past, at least when he's not in control of it, at least.
Yeah, the irony of this, though, is that this chap wrote the Rwandan national anthem.
So, that I did not know.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
So there'll be a constant reminder of him every time there's
absolutely
any kind of public event. Right, Lesotho, we're going to go to next, where the Prime Minister is due in court. Supposed to be in court.
Yeah, you might remember we spoke about this guy in the middle of last month, Thomas Thabane. He's the Prime Minister, still the Prime Minister of Lesotho, although he did say last month that he was going to resign, but he hasn't done so yet. It's a really curious case. He has been president twice. The last time he came into office was in 2017. And 2 days before he was sworn into office, his wife turned up dead. Now, they were in the middle of divorce proceedings, and it was fairly acrimonious. Her name was Lipolelo Thabane, beautiful name, and an investigation was launched into it. And then at the end of last year or early January, the police commissioner issued a letter basically saying that Thabane's phone records indicated that he was somewhere in the vicinity where the murder took place. Now,
it should
be said that she was shot point-blank range right outside her house along with a friend of hers. So this didn't sit well with the leading party, who asked for his resignation. He said he'd resign, and the whole process, the wheels of justice, went into operation. A court case was, he was charged, I should say, and he was supposed to face those charges last Friday. But a major coincidence is that he took ill at the time and had to go to South Africa to get treatment for that. So he wasn't able to make the court case at that particular time. Now, of course, his spokespeople have said, and his son have said, that he is going to come back to face the charges. And he looks forward to facing those charges because he's innocent of everything.
He remarried, though.
He did, about 2 weeks after he became Prime Minister, and again, a couple, two or three weeks after his wife was murdered. And indeed, that new wife has been implicated. She's actually faced charges of murder, so she's somehow involved as well. Should be said, there's about 8 to 10 other people who are facing charges at the same time. So it's causing chaos in DeSoto, as you can imagine, but it's great for their media, I suppose.
Yes. Right, Brazil we're going to go to next, and a story about a police strike, but also a senator.
Yeah, so an interesting story. It took place in the northern state of Ceará, and it involves a senator called Cid Gomes. I think he's about 56 years of age, and he'd be well known because he was a minister for education back under Dilma Rousseff, so that was about 3 or 4 years ago. And there is indeed, the military police are on strike at the moment. And police, when they go on strike, they tend to pick this time of the year because this is when Carnival is happening. Of course, when thousands of people are out on the streets and they need to be there. But it would appear that this particular force has a case in that they're looking for increased wages. All right. And now, as a police officer, you're not allowed to go on strike in Brazil, similar to here. The local court issued a warning against them, basically saying that anybody who goes on strike, you'll lose your job or you'll risk prosecution. So they reacted to this by setting up a picket outside one of the stations where they're based, so that others who didn't go on into the strike, you know, would cross that line, and they wanted to stop them. So Cid Gomes, this senator, set up a counter picket or a counter strike or a counter operation or whatever you want to call it, and he issued a warning to them that if they didn't disband within 5 minutes, that he was going to do something about it. And of course they didn't disband, and he got into a digger and drove straight at them. Naturally enough, somebody took out a gun to protect themselves and shot him twice. Luckily he managed to survive. And he's in hospital at the moment, but it's caused quite a storm in Brazil, and it has led to other police forces now either going on strike in various different states or threatening to do so. There has been a federal police force that's been deployed. I think about 2,500 officers have actually been sent to that state, and they're going to be there for about 30 days. That might stop the murders that are happening in the state. There was apparently 88 murders over 3 days that these police were on strike. So it might put a stop to that. But as I said, there are other places within the country where police are taking the opportunity to ask for increase in wages.
Notwithstanding the fact that, you know, he drove at them with a digger, but at the same time, police shooting at elected politicians is a pretty grim vista. Is he getting much sympathy for that?
Well, he'd be getting sympathy from people within his own party. But as I mentioned, he was a minister under Dilma Rousseff, so the current Bolsonaro supporters wouldn't be giving them much sympathy. I believe that the son of Bolsonaro, who's also a part of government or on the fringes of it in some respect, said, you know, what did he expect? So that was the reaction. So he's getting sympathy from some people, but not from everybody.
Yeah, though this kind of strategy would be more a Bolsonaro-esque strategy, one would have thought. Than the previous administration. Right, Cambodia we're going to go to next, and a woman has been arrested for posting images of herself.
Yes, so this is a 39-year-old Shrey Niang, who's kind of famous in Cambodia. I had a little look into it, and apparently online shopping through Facebook is very popular in that part of the world, and they sell various different items of clothing and accessories and the like. This particular woman, she was given a warning by police on the 16th of February that her methods of selling her wares were not really in line with how things should be done in Cambodia.
Okay.
All right, so the clothes that she was wearing in order to sell the clothes that she wanted to sell were deemed to be a little bit too sexy, and so they weren't happy with that. So she was made to apologise. She had to do the whole humiliating video thing, and that was posted online, and then she was let go with the warning. She, that afternoon, then went and posted another video of herself on Facebook, obviously trying to sell her wares, and she was nabbed for that as well. All right, and this time she's been charged. So under Articles 38 and 39 of Cambodia's Law Against Human Trafficking and Sexual Exploitation, apparently.
Okay.
That's what she's been charged with. So they're basically saying that she is guilty of peddling pornography. And if she is charged and convicted, she could get up to 15 months in prison. So it's not looking good for her.
And the images she's posted, are they, I suppose, by Western standards, are they particularly pornographic?
Not that I could see, to be honest with you. She was in a pair of underpants, as far as I know, and that was about the extent of it. But it comes on the back of a speech that was given by Prime Minister Hun Sen to the Cambodian National Council for Women on Monday, who said basically that authorities needed to take action against women who were revealing clothing while trying to sell stuff online. So it ties in with that.
All right, Thailand we're going to go to next. And the opposition party's been disbanded.
Yeah, this is one of the opposition parties. They're the Future Forward Party. So it's only about 2 years old. It's owned by a billionaire young guy, very charismatic, called Thanathorn Yuanguan Grandkit. And he apparently gave a loan of around 5.6 million euros to the campaign that party launched during elections last year, right? So that's a lot of money. And it goes well over the 300,000 euros that you can donate to parties while they're running campaigns during elections. Now, obviously, there's two words there. One is loan and one is donate. All right. So this is the problem. So the Electoral Commission basically said that they felt that a donation and a loan should be treated the same way. And the Constitutional Court has agreed with them. So therefore, they've basically said the party has acted illegally and they're now going to disband them. Now, it does help that most of the people who populate the Constitutional Court and also the Electoral Commission are really under the thumb of the current Prime Minister, Prayut Chan-o-cha, okay, who's, of course, a military leader.
Yeah.
All right, and it's effectively a junta there at the moment. I mean, they've even invented a hashtag, apparently, on Twitter, calling it Juntaland. All right. And this is the fourth political party in 13 years to be disbanded. So there's something rotten in the state of Thailand, as they say, in terms of democracy.
Yeah. And this particular party, were they anti-military to any great extent?
They were very anti-military. I mean, there was various different charges leveled against them. I mean, in January, the government tried to get them on basically a conspiracy to bring down the monarchy, which is just something that you don't go near in Thailand. It's sacred, as you know. That didn't stick, actually. So they had to go down this route of the money donation or loan. So they would be pro-democracy, anti-military, and so getting them out of the way was paramount for the junta.
Yeah, given the size, though, of this donation stroke loan, was this party effectively his baby, rather than it was an actual party?
Yeah, it was. But that said, it did get 81 seats in the last election, which is quite a significant number, and it was obviously enough to worry the Prime Minister and the military, so they've got rid of it. Now, they say they will be back, it has to be said, but in what capacity, we don't know yet.
We shall see. Right, okay, I suppose it was inevitable we'd end up doing coronavirus stories in this slot. This is in Ukraine, where violence has erupted.
Yeah, violence has erupted. It's one of these things. It happened in a small place called Novi Sanhari, a population of about 8,000 people in the middle of nowhere. Has to be said, and I hope nobody from there is listening, but it looks like a fairly grim place, to be honest with you. But this was the place where the authorities in the Ukraine have decided to house Ukrainians evacuated from Wuhan, right? So there's 45 of them that have been taken from Wuhan and brought to this particular place. And somehow locals got wind of it, they didn't like it, and they tried to stop the bus that was carrying these people from going to the military base where they're going to be kept, all right, for 14 days, obviously. So a riot ensued, effectively. 24 people were arrested, about a dozen military were injured and various different people taken to hospital. Stones were thrown at the bus, windows were broken and the like. We don't know if anybody on the bus was injured. But it's caused a bit of a storm in the Ukraine to the point where the health minister has decided that she is going to go and go to the military base where these people are going to be kept, and she's going to stay with them for 2 weeks to allay the fears of people within that town.
Have there been any cases in Ukraine yet of coronavirus?
Not that I know of.
Right,
not that
okay.
I know of.
Yeah, okay. And these people were, the rioters effectively were rioting because they felt that even though these were Ukrainian nationals, should be let back into the country.
Yeah, there is a strand to this story that says that an email was issued and it contained information that was somehow exaggerated. That's at least what the government are saying.
Okay.
So it's a very interesting interpretation, because they're saying that the email wasn't issued from anyone within Ukraine. So you know what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
They're trying to say the Russians did this.
So
this is every answer now. You know, that the Ukrainians have is basically, the Russians did it. And it may or it may not be, but I'm just saying that it was an interesting way of trying to calm the situation down by blaming somebody else, perhaps.
Right. Speaking of, the Russians are causing trouble in Belarus as well, or at least their language seems to be.
Yeah, it is. This is a very strange story. It involves a journalism student, about 20 years of age, a man by the name of Aramis Mirikian, who went into a coffee shop in Minsk and ordered a cup of tea in Belarusian. He was responded to in Russian by the person behind the counter, who didn't want to engage in that particular language, but he insisted on ordering in his native tongue. It came to a point where they got into an argument. It eventually had to be sorted out by the manager. But what's curious about this particular story is that it made it into Russian online newspapers, right? And as a result of that, this individual has effectively been threatened for insisting on speaking his own language within his own country. Now, it's a strange one because in Belarus, the vast majority of people still speak Russian and business is done through Russian, okay? Yeah. And the native language is seen as being an expression of national identity. It's kind of intellectuals and members of the opposition parties use it an awful lot. But increasingly, it's been used within Belarus as a marker of independence, as Russia tries to bring itself closer to Belarus and put a little bit of pressure on Belarus, as they're doing with everybody in the region.
And there's elements within Belarus that would be very open to that.
Oh, absolutely. That's the whole point. Yeah. That's the whole point. I mean, there's about 10 million people who live in Belarus. And as I said, the majority of them, they still conduct their business through Russian and that kind of thing. And the Russian language is a big political football, if you want, that Vladimir Putin uses as an excuse to go into these various different countries and interfere, shall we say. He says that, you know, that the Russian speakers within these countries are suffering discrimination. And this is another example of that, according to them.
OK, so I wonder, did this chap know if he went in and ordered in Belarusian that would cause a bit of a stir?
Yeah, but I think his point was basically that the languages are constitutionally treated equally within the country. She didn't back down either, I suppose, from his point of view. So it's caused a bit of a storm, or a storm in a teacup, if you'll excuse the pun.
Around a teacup.
Indeed. And, but it's just an indicator how these things can, you know, get out of control.
Yeah. Jonathan De Burka Butler, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sean.